And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, voting has begun. And the president has kicked off the latest furor of the week, saying that he cannot guarantee that he will leave office if the vote goes against him. At the same time, he's nominated a new Supreme Court judge, Judge Coney Barrett. There's really a lot of turmoil.
Well, he thrives in turmoil. He creates turmoil because turmoil disturbs the order of things. And he is really incapable of following order or norms. He can only operate his operations where the norms and the order of things are broken down. That's the nature of an autocrat. That's the nature of a demagogue. That's the nature of his psychological profile, of that malignant narcissism and sociopathy. So,
you're making an interesting point that the autocrats actually only can rule as supreme sovereigns. They are the government. Never mind that there's a government of 400,000 employees that have to function to administer the various policies and programs. They set the policy. They are the one. The government is them. And wherever they are, that is where the government is. You know, they talk about people who studied Nazi Germany talked about the phenomenally intricate Nazi bureaucracy. But the scholars all make one point. There was no actual functioning government. Hitler was the government. Wherever he was, that's where policy was made, and it was made only by him and whoever happened to be with him at that moment and about those issues. And well, that's the way it is with autocrats.
Yeah, it is. Remember, though, we had a preview of this. When Donald Trump came out during the campaign and said, I alone can fix it.
That's right.
Everything was him alone. It's the nature of the cult. But what we...
What is it, Louis XVI? I am the state?
L'état, c'est moi.
Yeah.
But what we... And we also saw in the Republican convention that they had no plan for him.
No.
Even
formally, they didn't bother to have a platform.
No. It was all Trump. But you know, I'm wondering if I don't know what to call it, a mistake, but it's an overlook. Trump can only get away with this if the Republican Party and its office holders allows him to get away with this.
But they do.
Remember during the campaign, you had all these warnings about him. You've got the quotes from Lindsey Graham. You have the quotes from Ted Cruz.
Remember Ted Cruz said, how do you know if Donald Trump is lying? He lies every time he opens his mouth.
Yeah.
Ted Cruz is a great defender of everything Donald Trump says now.
Yeah. And I always used to talk about the regressives in the Republican Party as opposed to the progressives in the Democratic Party. But what we're seeing now is that it's no longer regressives. They're the repressives.
Right. And that's true.
They are just operating on pure power, a power trip, not about the way that government is supposed to work. It's that if we can impose our rules, it's heads we win, tails you lose every single time. That's the way they're operating. It used to be that we had elections and one party would win and they would try to govern or govern, and the other side would say, well, we'll get you next time. We'll go out and do it. They don't even or they're not even pretending anymore. You've heard me for years say that at least 30 years, I think since the time of Newt Gingrich, at least, that there's this hubris, this conceit in the Republican Party that only they are entitled to run things, that they are the ruling class, and that Democrats or progressives or whatever are illegitimate in a certain way and are to be looked on in a certain way. And when things don't go right for the Republicans and these regressives and these repressives, they seek to change the rules, so they will. You remember that in several gubernatorial elections, when there was the people decided that we've had enough of Republican rule in the state house, for instance, where a Democrat won the governorship in North Carolina or in Wisconsin, the gerrymandered Republican legislature immediately went to work to strip the governor of powers that they had accorded to Republican governors and all previous governors. They do not want to be in any way run by the opposite party, no matter what the people say.
So if that's their point of view and that's their practice, forget their point of view, that's their practice, why are they legitimate actors and participants in the American political process? Why shouldn't they be banned?
Because the government was never, and the founders never set up the Constitution to do that. The one thing that they relied on was this checks and balances, and that there would be enough people, particularly in the Senate. Remember, the Senate was not a popularly elected body from in the beginning. It wasn't until the early part of the 20th century when they changed when there was an amendment to popularly elect senators, that they anticipated learned and statesmanlike people would sit and honorable people would sit in the Senate and be able to stop these things. And as we found out, with the Lindsey Grahams and the Ted Cruzes and the like, the Tom Cottons, these are well-educated people and people who have gone to law school, people who have taken pledges to serve their country. Lindsey Graham was in the military. I believe so was Tom Cotton. And all of that has gone out the window in this power surge that they're engaged in. Whether, and Donald Trump has just harnessed this and concentrated it to himself, to his benefit.
I think we have to look at it a little differently. The American government was formed by, the Constitution was formed by rich people who set up a structure to guard against what they were afraid of, which was what they called mob rule. But what they meant by mob rule was that non-property owners would be decisive in setting policy. They wanted to guard against that. And the Senate was them. They had to allow popular participation somewhere. They allowed it in the House federally, but they set up the Senate to guarantee that the mob would never really be able to take over. But what's happened with the growth of democracy and the spread of freedom and the empowerment of working people is that the danger to democracy does not lie from the mob. It lies from the rich, from the elite, now represented by these authoritarians in the Republican Party. So the structure that was originally created is upside down in terms of the threat that currently exists. That's why you can't have an electoral college. That's why the apportionment of two senators per state no longer makes any sense, because that guarantees what we have today, which is a president elected by a minority of the people, a Supreme Court chosen by a succession of presidents elected by minorities of people, a Senate composed of a majority elected by a minority of people, and with very little chance to change it given the existing rules, right?
Well, you sounded a little like Howard Zinn.
Oh, my God.
in his The People's History of the United States. I'll differ with you a little bit. I think that there's the threat to the government is from both ends. It is from the mob and from the elites, as you've talked about. I mean, look at the French Revolution. All right, that was the mob, or in the American terms, I think they were called the rabble. But you know, and you've talked about the elites, but the elites, and a lot of that had to do with slavery. You know, that was the South wanted to preserve that institution because that's where their wealth was. And remember, although the Declaration of Independence is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, a lot of the state constitutions talked about life, liberty, and property. And
oh, yeah, there's no question that the preservation of slavery was uppermost in the minds of the majority of the people who wrote the Constitution. No question.
However, what I think what they understood was having stability and having rules and regulations and adhering to them was, in the long run, beneficial to themselves, but would be beneficial to everybody. And what we've seen, I guess, over the last 50 years, and we talk about this in Nancy McLean's book and the Koch brothers, is that they've now taken the wealthy, the upper 1%, have taken this to the point where they've actually destabilized the governance of a country, and they've done so in order, you know, I guess just pure greed is a main motivating factor, but that destabilization from
well, it's not just greed; it really is their continued existence. Because look at climate crisis. The plain fact of the matter is that the many existing industries, as it is currently structured, should not exist if humanity is to exist, because they poison the environment within which humanity lives. And if they continue to do it, humanity won't be able to live.
Well, the thing is, the founders were visionaries. They were long-term thinkers. They were thinking in general terms. These people are short-termers. They only live for today and tomorrow. They're not worried about it. They just see everything as what they can get now. And I think they see it as a continuation of whoever comes after them is also going to be in the now or in the short term rather than these long-term stabilizing structures.
No, I think you're right. I think, but that is the danger to humanity right there. That outlook is the danger to humanity, because if you don't look into the long run, you don't know what to do in the short run. And if in the long run, what we're doing in terms of how we run our industrial plant, our farming, how we manage the 9 billion people that are soon going to be living on this earth, if we don't look at that and adjust our relationships in terms of that, the entire civilization breaks down and ultimately humanity dies because it's too hot, too wet, too fiery, and so forth and so on. These are dangerous people because they look only at the short term.
Well, they don't forget, they've also convinced themselves of this, and they've set up their own alternate reality in order to reassure themselves of this. That's why we have this academic elitism in places like George Mason University, the Mercatus Institute. So they're putting out their own propaganda in order to justify their own short-termism.
That's right.
Which gives them the comfort that what they're doing is right and loses the objectivity of the fact that what they're doing is what you just said.
So how are you going to – I mean, so I got a question for you. They dominate the Republican Party. How are you going to work together with them? I don't see the possibility.
Well, yeah. And that's why you're seeing more radicalization in the Democratic Party. That's why you see people like AOC getting elected. That's why, although Bernie lost his two bids, you start to see his ideas more and more influencing what the Democrats are looking at.
By the way, this week, Bernie gave a speech on YouTube, which tens of thousands of people listened to and watched. And the speech was about guaranteeing that the results of the election would be carried out. And it was a defense of the constitutional system, of the system of elections. And it was implicitly against force and violence. I don't quite understand why Biden didn't make a speech like that. Why did it take Bernie to have to make that speech? I don't get it. Is it that the Democrats can't defend democracy?
I think they've been so beaten and battered that they've lost that that edge to them. And you know, the question is, can they get it back? You know, we keep talking about there's something else that happened this week. You know, they had the 1619 project that the New York Times sponsored. And again,
the one tracing the history of racism in the country.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, there was a little bit of Howard Zinn in that as well.
Yeah, but Howard Zinn wasn't wrong.
I'm not saying that. But, you know, it just wasn't all built on the backs of slaves either. I mean, there were people in New England and the Mid-Atlantic states where there was no slavery.
Oh, there was slavery. What do you mean? There was slavery.
Well, it was.
There wasn't the plantation system.
No, it wasn't the plantation system. But we didn't have, you know, it wasn't the same as the South. On the other hand, with the I lost my.
It's true that it wasn't. It's true that it wasn't the same as the South. But it's also true that in those days, the South was the economic motor of the country, and it was the Southern economy which was the American economy. And aside for the shipping out of Boston and Philadelphia, the Northern economy didn't count for much in national terms.
Yeah, well, the South was agriculture, and don't forget though that until the cotton gin was invented. Their economy wasn't that much. I mean, what were they? Tobacco, essentially.
Rice, tobacco, and cotton. Cotton was declining, but then the gin was invented, and the cotton exploded. But that's true.
I want to get back to the Democrats and the 1619 project. There used to be a thing called civics that was taught in school.
Another guy who thinks school is important.
It's gone by the wayside, along with teaching people how to write in longhand. You know,
and geography. The idea,
yeah, and STEM.
Right.
You know, everybody wants science, technology, economics.
Engineering and math.
Engineering and math, those kind of things. And the soft sciences, or the social sciences, are just as important. Now, this week, Donald Trump came out and said he wants to have a course in what he calls patriotism rather than civics, which is, patriotism, what do they say, is that's the last refuge of scoundrels?
That's what they say.
He doesn't want civics because if you teach civics, it goes against everything that he's doing and, as you said, that the Republican Party is doing.
Right. That's right.
This
paragon of patriotism also came out at the beginning of the week, or the middle of the week, rather, and said that he could not guarantee that if he were defeated, he would leave office. As if that matters. Who the hell cares whether he leaves office? He's out if he's defeated. Some people responded and reacted to that by saying, oh, he's got to concede. If he doesn't concede, the election isn't decided. There's nothing that says he has to concede. Who cares if he concedes? It's not up to his subjective feeling.
Concession is a norm. It is not a rule.
No.
The law is self-enforcing.
Concession is only significant in the alternate facts that he and his coterie think exist.
You know, and some of the people came in the Republican Party came out and said, well, you know, that it isn't, you know, it's not going to happen, that if he loses, he'll have to leave. These are the same people who, by the way, said that they would never vote for Donald Trump, or they said that a Supreme Court justice should not be confirmed just before an election. You know, so you can't take their word for anything.
You can't take that they mean by their word. That's correct. But what he said scared enough people so that at the end of the week, people in the Pentagon, important generals, were saying that they would quit before they would carry out orders to order troops to fire on demonstrators who would be demonstrating if Trump, having been defeated, didn't leave office. They would quit. So people are taking his ravings quite seriously.
Yeah.
And we should, too.
Yeah. But I think those good generals shouldn't quit. I think what should be said, and I think what Biden should say is, you know, Donald, if you lose, you're out. And on January 20th at noon, I'm the president, and I'm giving the orders. And I'm coming back to the White House, and you better be gone. And those generals should be the ones saying, we'll be taking orders from President Biden, not ex-President Trump.
Trump is a landlord. He knows what it means to be evicted.
Well, he knows what to be an evictor, not an evictee.
I understand, but he understands the process.
Well, the process, as long as it works for him.
Yes,
remember,
of course. Right.
You know, if it works for someone else, he doesn't. We just discussed that, that type of thing.
Of course, meanwhile, he's trying to guarantee that the vote doesn't go against him, not because he thinks he can get the majority of the vote, but because he thinks he can suppress enough of the vote so that whoever gets counted, only his votes get counted.
Or the other votes get thrown out.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, he's out there. He's voting by mail, and he's telling his people to vote by mail while he's telling the American people that you can't have a legitimate vote by mail if he loses.
That's right.
But again, that's back to, we're back to the autocrat.
Yes, but then his press secretary and Pence also said, of course he'll abide by a free and fair election. But the definition of free and fair that they make has nothing to do with free and fair.
Correct.
They're talking about a rigged election.
Right. And that's going to be interesting when Pence and Harris debate in the second debate. By the way, the first debate is this week. And that's one thing. Biden hasn't been making a lot of appearances. He's been preparing for the debate. Trump has no intention of preparing for the debate. there was a good article in the New York Times, I think it was Thursday or Friday, by a guy named Richard Friedman, who was discussing...
Oh, the debating coach.
Yeah, how to debate or how not to debate Trump. And not to make the... You know, there's two sets of rules here, and the Democrats can't keep playing by their old set of rules. They've got to play by Trumpian rules.
If Biden doesn't keep saying when it's appropriate, that's a lie, Biden will lose the point of the debate.
Yeah, well, but Richard Friedman said there's a way of doing it. You have to sandwich that in, because certain ways of talking, you just reinforce the lie. So you can't repeat it. You have to undermine it. You have to make light of it. You have to, make light of him, embarrass him, rather than just what he says.
Well, that's right. You have to do what Reagan, who was a pretty good debater in that respect, did when he said, there you go again.
There you go again. That's true. I mean, Trump is absolutely shameless, and that's another problem when you have that kind of a pathology, when you can't shame someone. I mean, he's out there saying, well, he's trying to get rid of the Affordable Care Act, said he'll sign an executive order ensuring that people have what the Affordable Care Act gives them.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And you know, he's already tried to take credit for other things that the Obama administration and Joe Biden passed and signed. He's absolutely shameless on that.
Well, he takes credit for the law benefiting veterans that Obama passed.
Well, that's
and
the one
signed.
2014. Yeah. That's the one, 2014.
Yeah.
But and it's again his personality. He takes credit for everything and takes responsibility for nothing.
You have to nail him.
You have to nail him. meanwhile, a couple of other things. With the election, we know that Mike Bloomberg is starting to come through with his pledge. It's not $1 billion, but he's putting $100 million into Florida. He's already paid off the fines of 32,000 people so they can vote. We've heard athletes and entertainment people paying off more of those fines. So, of course, then you have to make sure these people get to vote. And he's also going to put Bloomberg's going to put $40 million into some sort of advertising between now and the election. That's a hell of a lot of money in one state.
It is a hell of a lot of money, but you know what? The Democrats have to do something to make sure that the Hispanic vote goes Democratic.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, in that state. Although some of the polls show that Biden's even up in Ohio. You know, these are states that you believe it when you see it, but you don't know. You don't know. And meanwhile, you know, another 870,000 people filed for unemployment.
Which means there's no end to the recession.
Right. And you're starting to see.
And you're seeing more cases of the coronavirus.
Yeah. Yeah. And even though the governor of Florida, I mean, this is where elections have consequences. He came out this week and said, we're going to open up. The virus is expanding. And he says, we're going to open all restaurants with no restrictions. And I'm going to block any individual cities or mayors or towns that want to go against that. The stupidity of it, the venality of it, is hard to fathom.
The man should be arrested.
Yeah. You can't. I keep saying you can't fool Mother Nature. And with regard to Donald Trump and these regressives and repressive Republicans, you know, she can't be bullied. She can't be, coward. She can't be lied to.
These people don't care. They take it for granted that millions of people will die. They say, well, they'll die anyway, so they'll die faster. So what? That's their attitude. Because they're used to doing that to people. They're the pro-life people. Sure, absolutely, the pro-life.
They're going to appoint a pro-life justice to the Supreme Court, who's only, as someone has pointed out, they're only pro-life until birth.
Yeah.
After birth, they're not very pro-life.
No.
We'll cut off your medical insurance so you can't get treatment and you die. We'll cut off your nutrition so you can't eat properly and you develop things and you die. Those kind of things don't concern them.
No, that's right. That's exactly right. They're completely wacko ideologues. Wacko. Not that they're ideologues. That doesn't make them wacko. It's that their ideology is wacky.
Well,
and inhuman.
They're self-reinforcing again by their bubble and their the things that they listen to and the things that they read online. They're self-contained, but that's the mark of a cult. They don't believe anything.
They're a cult, but there's millions of them. And even if Trump loses, they're not disappearing. And we have to have a plan for coping with that 35 to 40% of the population that goes along with this. That goes along with this, even if they're not in power. You don't need to have 50% of the population with you to dominate a society. 5% will do if you control the police and the army.
And intensity matters.
Yeah. Well, when is the debate next week?
It's Tuesday,
right.
9 o'clock.
Well, we'll have plenty of time to think about it and talk about it. Next week. This week we're finished.
Yeah, and the climate probably won't even come up.
Well, we'll see. That's up to the moderator.
Yeah. Well, Chris Wallace, he's more political than anything else. So.
All right. See you next week.
We will see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week. Same time. Same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.